Welcome back to Lighter Side, Joe Grammatico, Tom Kaliopoulos. Today we're going to be rounding out our all-time franchise playoff points leaders with 21 through 31. Tom, how's it going today?
Joe, I'm doing all right. Just busy sanitizing my doorknobs over here. You know, I'm running out, so I'm going to have to get to the store and buy some more spray or some handy wipes and make sure we stay disinfecting over here. Yeah. But everything's going well. I'm looking forward to talking some hockey.
Yeah, they're keeping us locked in here till the end of the month. And I love our conflicting rules. Stay until the end of the month, but automotive can go back to work a week early.
Yeah, Joe, it's driving me crazy, the inconsistencies. And I'm loving the billboards that I'm seeing around town, and it's getting to the point where I'm not going to be wearing a mask much longer when I go in these stores. I'm getting fed up with it. It's just it's breaking our immune systems, and, you know, I shutting in, and we need to be about and getting back to work here, Joe. There's a lot of counties that aren't hot areas, and, you know, if there's still areas that are hot, hey, shut it down. But I'm ready to go and get back to work, and I'm sure a lot of other people are too.
Yeah, you've been following Carl Menke up there in Owosso, the barber, 77-year-old barber.
Yeah, I'm loving how, you know, they want to let prisoners out of all these prison the jails and that have rape convictions and other serious convictions, but they want to free up the jail space for a 77-year-old man who wants to earn a living. Yeah, our governor's classic. Thank you.
Yeah, he got. They sent a letter, and the court, the county court, ruled that they wouldn't enforce the governor's order as a law, so they're allowing him to stay open. So I thought that was a pretty good interpretation of the law there. So good to see a victory for the citizen.
It's good. It's good, and you know, the craziness has got to stop. These people got to start. To a man, a citizens here in the United States, tax-paying citizens, especially the ones here in Michigan, gotta start sifting through all the BS and get to the common sense, and let's just move on and get these people out of office and get some people in that want to do work for the people, Joe. And that's all I'm gonna go with is on the political end. But you know what isn't you know affected politically is. Hopefully the NHL. What are they going to do here? Let's get the playoff hockey going here.
Yeah, I know you're excited. I told you before I could go either way. I'm fine. I'm fine with just moving on and seeing the draft, but I'll watch hockey if it's on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's going to be tough watching in the summer. I never liked the NHL when they had those weekend playoff games and you know, with the weekend playoff games are fine, but when they put them on in the afternoon thinking that was prime time, it's like last thing I want to be doing, even a hockey guy like me on an 80-degree day, is you know, something, you know, being in front of a TV watching hockey. I mean, prime time for hockey is in the evening when your day is done and you did all your chores and, you know, you can wind down, sit in front of the television, it's dark outside, and 8 o'clock to 10:30 games, game times, puck drops, and that's, to me, that's prime time hockey. But it's one thing I think the NHL has got to lose. But occasionally you have those afternoon games. I used to watch them when I was a kid with Tim Ryan doing the broadcasting and everything. And, you know, I think those were only played a certain time of the season, though. It wasn't like through the playoffs, and everything was always at night. And I remember hockey night in Canada, and yeah, so that's one of the things they need to fix. But I think they're trying to, you know, reach other demographics, you know, and if they think it works for NASCAR or something, but it's totally different. You know, you're the same kind of hardcore fan, but it's like, nah, hockey's an evening sport to me. That's where it should be watched.
Yeah, I miss a lot of hockey when they play it in the afternoon. I forget it because I got other stuff going on, and
it's crazy.
They're gonna have to play quite a few in the afternoon if they get this season crammed in. That's for sure.
That's why I brought it up. It's like the schedule is going to be a little bit different, and there's going to be a lot of back-to-backs, and some games it's going to be probably four in one day, you know, and playing back-to-back-to-back-to-back is a, you know, and it's going to be curious to see what TV channels carry them. I hope they don't blow it and put two games on at the same time. You know what I mean, Joe?
Right. Yeah, we'll see what they do. It'll be interesting as long as they get it going. Let's just make a decision and let's go with it. I'd hate to have them just drag this on through the rest of the month with no decision and lose time on planning next season. If they're not making progress, or it doesn't look good, there's too many unknown variables, just call it a year and spend your energy on getting a plan rolled out for next year.
Joe, they're losing 150 mil by not playing the regular season. And I still laugh when they say, I just say either scrap it or go right to the playoffs, which is fine. I'm all good with that. But they keep bringing up the fact that, you know, these rinks want the regular season finished because of the 150 mil, mm-hmm. and I get that. But they always make these comments about, like, well, a team like Detroit would have to play meaningless games. No, they're not meaningless. If you're going to play the final 12 games, it's going to have ramifications for who makes the playoffs.
Right.
They're basically going to be in a spoiler role.
Right.
So no, if they're going to sit there and say they're meaningless games, then everything the Red Wings did last year, you know, when they play that BS garbage, well, we got to win games, we're not going to tank, you know, they mm-hmm. went on that mantra,
right,
and end up winning seven in a row or something towards the end of that year. They thought it would be a carryover to the regular season this year, and,
right?
You know, I knew it wasn't going to be because they didn't have talent. So they didn't have kids that knew how to play the game. So, no, it wasn't a carryover. So, basically, they could have had a chance of getting a better draft pick and probably would have ended up getting like maybe a player like Quinn Hughes, you know, as opposed to Zadina, you know. But that's another story in itself. They could have drafted him anyway.
Right.
Or they could have got the big kid, you know, the Finnish player or whatever his name is, Jaakko or I can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah, Kapo Kakko.
Yeah, you know, a guy that could step right in and be a power forward for him. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, so they need to throw that garbage out saying the games are meaningless because, you know, you can't sit there and flip-flop that, you know, to your benefit every time, you know, a situation arises. You know, bottom line is you play the season out, and is it going to benefit a team like the Wings? No. Because they don't have any veteran leadership. So that's the bottom line. They got the worst core of veterans in the league, you know, especially since Zetterberg left. And these guys aren't mentoring these players. So you're getting young. The young prospects the Red Wings have are basically dying on a vine learning this game themselves at the mm-hmm. NHL level. They're mm-hmm. learning how to be professionals themselves because you're not going to learn from a guy like Abdelkader.
Right.
You know, no disrespect, but maybe there is disrespect because he hasn't done nothing in 6 years. So I get sick of all the Abdelkader lovers and, you know, all these other nuanced Red Wing fans who love these players, and they don't realize that they're not doing anything. They're going through the motions and collecting money that they don't deserve, and it's really a nightmare to watch, especially when the younger players are counting on them to give them some subtle hints on how to be a professional, because I don't see it, not even in Dylan Larkin. There's a lot of inconsistencies there. People know it around the league. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody wants Detroit's garbage, even their better players. So it's like, because they don't know how to win, mm-hmm. you know, and the bottom line is the Wings need some can't-miss players in this draft. It's just, this is a huge draft for them. You know, Yzerman's got to get it right. So, or it's going to set them back another 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, we'll see. But yeah, I want a decision. Let's get it going or call it so we can make plans for the off season and get the draft going.
When's the deadline, Bill? Are you gonna, they gonna have a cut point on when they're gonna make a final decision?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I heard this week maybe they'll get some news out, and we'll have something to report next time.
All right. Well, we'll be
Let's
looking
see.
forward to that because we need to know on our end what we need to be talking about in future shows, and it might just be a mock draft and then carry it over.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I really want. I just want to work on my mock draft and talk about it and then see the real thing.
There's a
Let's
lot of
go.
talk, and it'll be fun to watch these players and where they fall, and that's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, so let's get to it. 21 through 31, franchise all-time leader in playoff points. We covered 1 through 10 on a previous show and then 11 through 20 last time. We'll start today with 21, original six team, the New York Rangers, all-time franchise leader Brian Leetch with 89 points.
That blows my mind, Joe.
Yeah.
Anytime you get a defenseman, like I was miffed by Al MacInnis with all the great talent that Calgary Flames teams had over the years with some of your favorite players like Joey Mullen and Theo Fleury. And then you have Rangers in the same predicament, a team that has had some playoffs over the years. And you got Brian Leetch with what, 89 points? That's amazing to me. Who's the active leader now, Joe?
Chris Kreider has 37.
And he won't even be with the, more than likely won't even be with the Rangers this year. He's a free agent, correct?
I believe you are correct.
Okay, so you got Messier second place. And look, you got a lot of history. Like, you had Jean Rattel in that organization, Rod Gilbert. It just, like I said, those original six teams, they didn't play as many rounds, but man, they had to go through some teams to get even three playoff rounds in. And you know, it's amazing if you do run, you get probably 20 plus points back in the 70s. But had a lot of great history there, and it just goes to show you how talented Mr. Leetch was, because he was a prototypical American boy who could skate and pioneer the defenseman position as far as jumping into the play. Took a page out of Bobby Orr, Paul Coffey's book, and other great defensemen that could rush the puck and jump into the play. He did a lot of jumping in on the rush and driving the far post and getting backdoor chances more than anybody I knew. And he had the ability to get back, pick through traffic, and get back to his position. So this guy was the real deal. Played the power play a lot as well. And, you know, had a good supporting cast in New York. I'm surprised they didn't have more cup appearances too, probably because they ran into tough New Jersey teams. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, no, it's an, another. I mean, remember Bork led the Bruins too, all time. Another original six team. It just kind of baffles me that Brian Leetch, a defenseman and great players that played for the Rangers for a long time, that Leetch is the all-time leader. But yeah, they had, it could have been more. They, like you said, matched up against those New Jersey Devil teams, and it was an era that was tight defensively. That's another, you know, surprise to me. I'd have to look, but I'm gonna guess that a lot of those points came in the playoff run in '94 when they won the cup.
Yeah,
But
absolutely.
yeah,
yeah, I think he
just,
won the Conn Smythe, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah, he was the Conn Smythe winner that year when they won the cup. But yeah, it's odd to see a defenseman, especially on an original six team. Yeah, he's got Messier edged out, and then you had mentioned Rod Gilbert already. Just, yeah, Brian Leetch, good player. Good for him to see him up there, that he showed up on that, you know, deep playoff run, and probably could have had, like you said, a lot more success had the New Jersey Devils not really taken over the Eastern Conference there. Right, actually, the following year, 95, they took over.
Yeah, you had Pittsburgh in the early 90s that owned, and then you had to go through New Jersey as well. So those are two tough teams to, and Washington wasn't a slouch either. They always, we talked about their team with Ovi, I think a few shows back, and basically why Ovi's numbers weren't as prominent. But yeah, there's a lot of, or there wasn't any players close to Ovi, I should say, as far as those early Washington teams with all the Peter Bondra and all those guys they had over there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, you had great teams over there in the East that would knock each other off. And unfortunately, New York was a team that got knocked off pretty much perennially every year, annually, I should say. And except for 94.
Yeah. 22, another original six team, Toronto Maple Leafs, their all-time leader with 77 points is Doug Gilmore.
That's another team. It's like pretty low point total, eh, Joe, for a team.
Yeah.
It tells you they weren't in the playoffs a lot from the late 70s on. Probably missed it quite a few times, actually, and but yeah, I'm surprised on this too. I would have never picked Dougie Gilmore with all the rich history of like with Daryl Sittler and Dave Keon and Matt Sundin and guys like that. But it just goes to show you, like with Frank Mahovlich, they didn't play as many games back then in the playoffs to make a long run. And if you got bounced early, it was, you know, just tight to the vest hockey back then as well. So yeah. And just Gilmore did it with a few teams as well.
Yep. Yeah, he had some. He played on some. I mean, Toronto was hit or miss throughout the late 80s into the 90s. And they had some bad teams and then some pretty good teams. And then just overall just seemed mediocre through that whole period when Doug Eath was there.
Yeah, I mean, they had that nice little run in 93. And you know, with the L.A. end up beating them in seven. It would have been interesting to see the dynamic of a Montreal-Toronto Stanley Cup if that would have happened. Mm-hmm. It would have been pretty epic.
Yep, that would have been real good. You know, I was listening to Don Cherry's Grapevine podcast, I don't know, it was probably about a month or so ago now, maybe even longer, back when I could drive regularly. But he was talking about that 93 playoff series with LA and Toronto, and he talked about watching a pregame, and you know, he said that the guys were laughing and joking around, and he said he could tell by the mentality that they thought they had it, and he remembered thinking, they're not going to win, LA's going to eliminate them, but he believed that if they would have had the right mindset at that time and got past LA, he thought that they would have been able to beat the Canadiens in that cup final.
Yeah, I mean, they would have matched up better against Montreal than I think LA did, even though it was a great series, because Montreal struggled all year. I mean, I think they barely made the playoffs that year with a young defensive core. And they end up just putting it together, you know, towards the end of the season and then into the playoffs and just made a run off the shoulders of Patrick Roy. But I agree with what Don Cherry said there for sure.
At 23 is Martin St. Louis of the Tampa Bay Lightning with 68 points, and he's probably going to get past pretty quick here by Nikita Kucherov, who's the active leader with 61.
Yeah, you know, you got Stamkos too if he stays healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys will probably pass them, both of them. And
Tyler Johnson too. Is he still in Tampa?
He's with 48 points. You got all in the top five these guys, but. You know, this organization's kind of weird to me. They were playing pretty well. They're not projected to do anything after their first round upset last year, and then all of a sudden they're just coming out of nowhere, they're playing well. I mean, you obviously got to respect them, but everybody's looking at Boston as the cream of the crop over there in the East. But, you know, this could be one of those years where everybody takes their eyes off Tampa Bay and they finally make that run. Stamkos stays healthy. But that's another reason why, you know, I would be interested to see a playoff just to see how Tampa reacts to their failure of last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but St. Louis was a good player. One of your more skilled, smaller guys. Really good international player, but I just think the game passed him by after a while, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All these big players coming in, and it's weird how you're seeing like some of these smaller defensemen in the game now coming in.
Right.
I guess it's probably a lot easier playing the game as a small defenseman, you know, especially if you're offensive minded, because that's usually what you are.
Right.
When you're a smaller defenseman, you got the play in front of you a lot, and you're usually pretty agile enough to break forecheck pressure. So you're not, if you have any kind of intelligence of going back to retrieving a dump in or something, you know how to play angles like Rafalski and the Quinn Hughes and Torrey Krug. These guys are, you know, they have to be good at that because they wouldn't survive in a big man's game, you know, so.
Right.
Martin St. Louis did it up front. There's a few guys before him, Theo Fleury and Cliff Ronning is another name. Had some offensive success. Was a kid from Toronto and Chicago, Steve Sullivan or whatever. He used to give Detroit fits.
Mm-hmm.
Nashville as well. He was another small guy that could play and produce. But St. Louis, I think if he had a little more size on him, I think he could have played another 5 years in the league for sure.
Now, number 24 is going to be weird for me to say out loud because it's weird for me to read it on paper.
It is weird.
His first overall pick of the old Winnipeg Jet franchise, which is now the Arizona Coyotes. So the all-time leader is a guy that never played a single game as an Arizona Coyote, Dale Hawerchuk, 49 points, all with the original Winnipeg Jets back in the 80s.
Man, you know what, Joe? If you asked me how many points did Dale Hawerchuk have as a Winnipeg Jet, I would tell you it'd probably be closer to 100 because I'm telling you, this team was skilled, man. I used to watch this team in the early 80s and some of the games they had against Edmonton, and the series went long, and they were some of the games were high scoring, and you know, Hawerchuk's name and Steen and all these skilled forwards they had from Europe and all that. And even on the back end with Tepa Numanen and Mantha and all these guys. I mean, they could play the game and score quick, just like Edmonton. That's, you know, ironically, they had an old-timers game recently, a Heritage Classic game between the two of them. I watched it on YouTube, and it was a great rivalry that was hardly ever spoke of because of the Calgary-Edmonton rivalry. But Dale Hawerchuk, coming out of junior, was always one of my favorite players. I remember reading the junior magazines that I eventually were in, playing in the Quebec Major Junior League. Well, Dale Hawerchuk played with the Cornwall Royals, who happened to be in the Quebec Major Junior League,
right.
Even though they were, I think, an Ontario-based team. It's weird how that works out. But anyway, he used to be one of my favorite players coming into the NHL. So, and then he scored 103 points, I think, his rookie year or something. And
yes.
But yeah, to sit there and tell me 49 points is the leading point getter for, well, now the Arizona Coyote. Pretty low.
Yeah, he couldn't get, well, those Winnipeg teams couldn't get out of the first round. They had, Brian Hayward in goal, who ended up being, was he a backup in Montreal when they won the cup in that late 80s team or on that playoff run? And then my buddy Pokey Redick at the end of the 80s. Yeah, they never had good goaltending. They were an easy first round knockout for the Oilers.
Well, and it's like, you figure, you would think like Tamo Solani would be in there, and
right,
a few other players like you got Tkachuk, but I mean, Paul McLean was a good player for Winnipeg. He always played on the wing with Dale Hawerchuk, and then he got traded in to St. Louis, and then ended up going over to Detroit and playing on Iserman's wing with him and Duguay,
yep,
or Gallant, you know, for a spell in the 80s. But, I mean, I would think that that number would be higher. But, yeah, that this is probably the shocker of the that and the McInnes one, leaving Calgary. Are right. Two of the shocker on this list for me.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I feel like when you think more, well, no, I guess that old. Yeah, I feel like when I think Winnipeg Jets, yeah, you think more. You know, Tamu Solani was a rookie on that team, and then Keith Tkachuk was a member of the Jets, yeah, and he played with the, he was still with the organization for the Coyotes for a handful of years, but they, and they had some decent teams, those Coyote teams, but I don't think they ever made it out of the first round. They were good to take you 6-7 games.
They were bounced by Detroit a few times, and I will, you know, we'll probably talk about Tkachuk in the, you know, future show with some of the topics that we have. I think his name will come up, but he's always been a disappointment to me, like especially early in his career when he played with this team, you know, early in his career, because his playoff numbers are not good.
No.
And a lot of times I think he had, his penalty minutes were crazy because they were immature penalty minutes. Mm-hmm. That's why I see the Tkachuk boys playing in the NHL right now, and I think they have better discipline than their pops did. Because they're producing more than they're, you know, and they're more or less agitating. Mm-hmm. Whereas the dad, Keith, he took a lot of bad penalties because he let the wings get under his skin. I remember even when he was with Winnipeg, I think the Wings played them in a playoff series the last year of that building. I'm not sure, but I remember him taking a lot of bad penalties with both franchises. Mm-hmm. And putting Detroit on a power play quite a few times, changing momentum. So yeah, you know, but his point totals are real disappointing too. And, but yeah, to see Hawerchuk with leading that franchise with 49, I would have probably bet high that it would have been closer to 100 based on how that team scored goals.
Yeah.
We're a pretty good offensive team.
That would be a trivia question that would probably stump most people, because if you asked who led the Arizona Coyotes franchise, Dale Hawerchuk never played for the Arizona Coyotes, so you'd never pinpoint that name as the leader. And
right. Well, I think if you get tricky, Joe, you would have to start breaking down, like you'd have to put Winnipeg on there, and then you would have to put Quebec for Colorado or Nordiques, and then you would have to add the Hartford Whalers and all these other teams that became something else, and then the list just gets too crazy. So that's probably why.
25 is Philip Forsberg of the Nashville Predators. He's got 44 points. He's also their active leader. That one's not too surprising there.
No, he's a good player. I always liked him. Good two-way player, built for the playoffs, and every time you see that team play, he's always in the midst of things, and offensively especially. And, you know, that organization has been run properly, and those numbers should be enhanced. But how many years has he been in the league, Joe? Does it say?
It doesn't say on this list, but I can find out here pretty quickly. Forsberg. He's been in the league 9 years now. They've been in the playoffs 5 times.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's going to continue to lead that program. And, you know, they're a blue-collar team. They're one of those teams that are probably always going to make the playoffs. I can't see them ever not, unless they really start unloading, like contracts and stuff. But you know, they're always going to be a middle of the pack team, and that could surprise you and make a, you know, a couple round playoff appearance, or, you know, and that should bode well for Philip Forsberg as far as, you know, being consistently a 10 points a playoff year guy, you know. But other than that, nothing too crazy.
Yeah. Number 26, Eric Staal of the Carolina Hurricanes, 43 points to lead that franchise. And the bulk of that came from his 28 points when the Canes won the Cup in 2006.
Yeah, did that 25 games, eh, Joe?
Yep. Yes. And you see, and I probably would have guessed either Rod Brendamore or Ron Francis led this franchise. But yeah, Eric Staal, it seems I wouldn't have picked Eric Staal. I would have went back more to Francis or Brendamore, but yeah, Eric Staal.
Brendamore for sure. Maybe even you know, but 25 games in that playoff cup win in 2006 is a lot of games, Joe. You figure, well, how many rounds, Joe, to get to the cups? Four.
Four. That's
so they almost went the full seven in every one of them.
Yep, pretty close.
So they almost played the max. 28 games.
They beat the Oilers in that 2006 cup final, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember not being excited at all for that Stanley Cup Finals. And it was a hot summer, too. I remember that in the early June. It was already pretty warm that year. And I used to just let it run in the background like while I was doing other stuff. It definitely was one of the few Stanley Cup Finals that didn't keep my attention.
Matt, you know, it's one of those I mean, who was the goalie for that team? I can't remember his name.
For the Hurricanes that year? Yeah. Or for the Oilers?
The Hurricanes. He made a name for himself, and I can't think of his name right now. I coached a youth goalie. She loved the goalie. She loved him.
Well, you had – it was – Cam Ward was the backup, but Cam it was Ward. That Martin Gerber was the starter.
Okay, Cam Ward, it took him to a cup another year, right?
Yeah, he would have been. Yeah, Ward was with them in 06. That would have been his rookie year. I don't know if they've been to the finals since then.
09, I think.
Yeah, you know what? He was. So Ward came in. That was his rookie season. He came in relief of Gerber in that playoff. So he won in his rookie year, Ward won the cup for him, and he won the Conn Smythe trophy that year.
Okay, I knew that. So yeah, that's...
yeah, that was the because he's only been Ward's only been 1-2 now. I can't tell off of that, but yeah, that was his rookie season. He came in when Gerber went down, and he played 23 of those 25 playoff games.
Okay, but back to Eric Staal though. You figure 43 points in only two playoffs.
Right,
that's a nice total.
Yeah,
that's consistency. He just hasn't had a team that is been consistent to help him.
Right.
Well, those numbers would probably be the way he's produced. That's like 20 points.
Yep.
A playoff. Not to say he's going to do that every year, but you figure 15 to 20, it's like that's easily putting him in a close to the 200 if he's making the playoffs, say 15 straight years. But
yes.
Which has happened with a few teams. So yeah. Carolina's pretty a good young team right now. So. Is he still with them?
No, he's been with the Wild for the last few years.
I get confused where those Staal brothers are playing.
There's too many of them. it's like trying to keep track
they're
of
all different ages.
Yeah, it's like trying to keep track of the Sutter brothers. I never knew who was who and who was where. And
played against the Twins in Memorial Cup, and I was taking faceoffs because they moved me to center ice in that game. And it was a Lethbridge Broncos. They were played instead of Swift Current Broncos, they switched to Lethbridge Broncos. And that was right after that big bus accident they had with all the players in it, like Sheldon Keefe and Joe Sakic were on that team.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so anyway, I'm playing against the Twins, Rich and Ronnie. Every time I took a face off, they're just talking smack. So I'm pitchforking them in the groin, you know. Mm-hmm. Every time the puck's dropped, I'm pitchforking them in the groin. And I'm just saying, dude, Ronnie, you're a minus three today. What's going on? You know, we're just chirping each other. But, yeah, they're, you know, they're those typical annoying Sutter. They all look the same with the big ears.
Yep.
And they all look the same, man, with the skinny necks and all that. But they're difficult to play against because they're not skilled or anything, but they're always just – they're real gritty. So you're in for a battle. So I'm going against two of them. You know, it's kind of funny. They're taking turns on me. And, you know, but I gave it to them. We end up winning the game, knocking them out. So
I get it. Now we got off topic of Eric Staal to the Sutter brothers. I got to run with this one. I watched a documentary. I believe it was on Amazon, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was about this beer league hockey team out in Western Canada. I want to say they were in Manitoba, and it's like a minor junior hockey team, but it's like beer league overage. You know, it's basically like your buddies got in this beer league, but it's like this big Canada Cup deal. It's a real big deal. So, 1 year, I believe it was Daryl Sutter. Somebody knew him, and he lived in the area, like 5 minutes from the rink. So he took over the team, and so they got him in a coach. And like these guys, right? Like they're like the sheriff in town. It's almost like Mystery Alaska. Everyone's got their day jobs. They practice beforehand, and they play like a game or two a week. So Sutter comes in. And these guys are talking about how they've always wanted to win the cup and this Canada Cup that they go after, and they make it to the finals and they're like one of the better teams, but they can never win. And Sutter comes in there and he starts kicking people off the team. He's like, this guy's not good enough to be on our team. We're not going to win with this guy. And like all these guys are pissed off because it's like their buddy that they started the team with, and Sutter's kicking people off the team and he's like recruiting people, and they end up winning the cup. It's pretty funny. But it was just like he comes in and he takes over. He's like, nope, this isn't going to fly. We're going to do things right if we're going to win this trophy. So
they're pretty abrasive dudes, man. Brian Sutter, the oldest one, was at a Edmonton reunion. They were celebrating the team. And Semenko and all these guys were still alive, you know. And I think they were closing the rink down where they played to open their new one. So they had this big celebration, and I guess they invited him because I don't know why, but he's from Alberta, the son of the family of Viking Alberta, all those Sutter brothers, so there's some link to it. But he came there, and him and Keenan came to the show and just to talk about what it was like playing against Edmonton, and he's swearing on the stage and everything, and it's like a family show, you know. It's like, so they're a pretty abrasive family. They're pretty, you know, no frills guys, but you know where you stand with them, so you can respect them for that. But yeah, Daryl Sutter was always kind of a goofball.
Yeah, I saw it on Amazon Prime. It's called Blood, Sweat, and Beers. It's a documentary.
I'll YouTube that and see if it comes up.
Documentary of the Bentley Generals, a beloved amateur hockey team from a small town in Alberta, and their passionate quest to bring home their first national championship.
How many series is that?
It's a 60-minute documentary.
Oh, that's it. I'll have to view that in bed tonight or something. Pop your earbuds in and
Blood, Sweat, and Beers. Yeah, it's pretty. It's pretty funny. Daryl Sutter comes in and he's all intense. It's basically like just having your beer league. I mean, it's in Canada, right? So it's pretty intense regardless. They all want to win. But just Daryl Sutter's in kicking people off the team and trying to trade people. It's pretty funny.
Setting a new trend for beer league.
Yeah.
But anyway, Eric Staal, getting back to him. A good, solid player, and like I said, the funny thing about this stat is two playoff appearances in 11 seasons isn't going to cut it, man. But if he can string a few together, he could easily pass 100 points, you know, 150 points.
Oh, for sure. So, yep.
He won't do it with this team, so.
Nope. Nope, not anymore. The time's passed him by. Who's next? 27, Zach Parise, 31 points, is the active leader and all-time leader for the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, good player, but, you know, I'm glad the Wings didn't sign him.
Remember, yeah, they, yep.
They could sign him and Suter. And
yep, him and Suter. I remember.
Too much money.
It was a lot, and I didn't think the way the league was at the time, because that's already been, what, 5, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
When that was talked about, just the way the league was being played at the time, it was still a lot tighter than it is now, and I didn't think he was going to be a good fit, and I didn't see him being a guy that could be a real big difference maker for the Wings.
No, and I think didn't he sign like a 10-year yep. contract? Over?
Yeah, they each signed nine or 10 years, something crazy long.
Well, Parise's got 5 more years to go. You know, on this contract, and Mikko Koivu is also another guy who's a pending unrestricted free agent, and those two are like tight with the team points here, 31-28, but I don't know. That surprises me too. But you know, I don't know. I thought they would have coupled them with the North Stars, but evidently that's going to go Dallas.
Yeah, that would go to Dallas. They're yeah. 28 is the new team in town. Riley Smith, 28 points for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, two deep postseason runs.
Yeah, it's fun to see a team that's been in the league for 3 years now. They have their leading scorer is not the bottom. He's 4 up, so it'd be interesting to see the couple guys and teams that fall below the Vegas Golden Knights. But Riley Smith came really out of nowhere to be an impact player for the Golden Knights.
Yeah, he's a good hockey player. I don't know what... Who was it? Came from Boston, didn't he?
I believe it was Boston because he's Brendan Smith's brother, correct?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like the night and day from the hockey IQ between the two of those players, because I'm going to tell you, Brendan Smith is not a consistent player in the NHL because he's not smart. This kid, his brother, I'm guessing it's his younger brother, is a way better player. And mainly because, yeah, they're different positions and everything, but it's everything's between the ears.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Riley did play with Dallas and then Boston, wasn't it?
Yeah, he started with Dallas, and then he was in Boston and Florida, and then Florida really? Put him up in the expansion draft.
Oh, yeah, he did play with Gallant. I think Gallant brought him back to Vegas with him.
Yeah,
He was playing for Gallant in Florida, right?
Yeah, he was there. I don't know when Gallant was coaching there, but he was there in Florida for the last 2 years, 2015 through 2017.
Yeah, Gallant was there in one of those years, and before his auspicious exit from that team, which was a joke, you know. But Riley is a good player, and he's another guy like Sagan. I don't know what Boston was thinking getting rid of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was more or less a numbers game.
Right. Yes, I'm just
good hockey player.
Yes, I agree.
I think Vegas is good in the sense that they're built for the playoffs. And that's what people here in Detroit don't get, you know, and why people get pissed at Holland after 2009. Okay, you saw then the Wings needed to cut bait, and then they started overvaluing players like Helm and guys like Abdelkader who showed well then because they had a support cast that was beyond belief.
Right.
And then they had, you know, big moments, which, geez, were far and few between after that,
right,
for a lot of the players. Then Franzen's bad injury and, you know, everything that happened to him just compounded everything. But you look at a guy in a team like Vegas, they're built per man, per like forward, defenseman, goaltending. They're built for the playoffs. So they're a team that you can legitimately say the old cliche, just get in the playoffs. They're personify that cliche. Whereas the Wings, yeah, they're making 23 playoff runs, but those last 10 years, man, were a joke, because even with Datsyuk and Zetterberg, they depending on what matchup they got, and it always wasn't a good one, because it was Boston a couple years, it was L.A. 1 year when they couldn't beat those guys and their physical mismatch, and mm-hmm. I don't know who else they played, but it always seemed like they'd be bounced in the first round, and then they made a couple deep runs against Chicago, where they should have won, and they couldn't close them out when they had that 3-1 lead. And that was one of the years that Chicago went on to win the Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Detroit wasn't built for the long grind. They had too many small players like Nyquist, Tatar, and guys like that, and it's just, you watch regular season games and they're getting beat off the straight board. But this kid right here, he personifies what Vegas is about, a good transition game off mistakes, miscues through the neutral zone. And he's able to strike quick because he's a good skater and he's got a great set of hands and a lethal, accurate shot. And, no surprise that he's leading the franchise. And there's some good players on this list, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're looking at Stone, guy who had great playoff success in Ottawa for a couple of years, and good skilled players like Carlson and Marchessault, and then you got Tuck, who I think is probably one of the most talented players that nobody hears about in the league.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't get talked about a lot, frankly, outside of Vegas, but he's a very talented guy.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how his career flourishes, because he's a pretty good player, unless he screws up and he's kind of a melonhead off the ice, but who's to know? I mean, nobody knows much about the guy.
Right.
So anyway.
All right. Yeah, we'll get to the next one. Real quick, I said it was Daryl Sutter that coached that team. It's Brian Sutter. So.
Okay.
Ron
that's
Sutter.
The guy. The oldest one.
Yeah, Brian's the oldest.
Telling you about. He's pretty brazen, but they're all kind of like that.
Yeah.
So plug any one of them in.
Yeah, us Sutter. All right. 29's Blake Wheeler and the revamped Winnipeg Jets. 27 points. He's the all-time leader and active leader. That's a good team in Winnipeg. I don't think they get enough credit. I was pulling for them last year, but with Scheifele, Wheeler, Laine, they got some big guys there and a really good goalie. So you could see Wheeler, Scheifele, you could see these numbers shoot up in the next few years. And even Kyle Connor is another guy that real talented. Local. He's local.
Yeah. He played Bell Tire with Dylan Larkin, and he also he played against my son. Some of the 94 teams that I coached, we used to play their younger teams. They played AAA, and they used to play us as a AA team. They were a year younger than us. But, good player. Scores a lot of big goals. And that's a team that's, you're going to have a core group of guys like on this list that are just going to – their numbers are going to – except for Bufflin, obviously – they're just going to continue to grow. And they got a local goalie as well, too, right?
Yeah. What's his name? Hellebuck. Connor Hellebuck. Yeah.
Played high school, I believe, here in Michigan, right?
Yeah. Big kid. I want to say it was somewhere around Walled Lake. I don't think it was Walled Lake, but somewhere, White Lake, somewhere in that area.
Yeah, somewhere like that. And he's one of the better goalies in the league. And, they're a good team. And Wheeler is a good hockey player. Good hard nose forward, good face-off man, but you could pick anyone on this list, and they could lead the team down the road.
Yeah,
this is going to be a franchise that is going to make playoff pushes every year. So,
yeah,
You know, as long as they're fiscally and the revenue stays aboard, like, you know, the whole reason why they ended the franchise in the first place. But I don't see that being a problem now. Now
with collective bargaining and their revenue sharing. And they got a good product up there, too. So let's see. Yep.
They're doing it right. Another team that is built for the playoffs.
Yes. Number 30 is, there's a tie, the first tie. Cam Atkinson and Artemi Panarin tied for the Columbus Blue Jackets all-time leader with 18 points.
Yeah, another team that just doesn't have a lot of playoff history, but that should change. You know, I'm surprised. You know, there's a lot of skill on this team. And they're another team that's built for the playoffs. They're a heavy team to play against. And then you plug in a player like Cam Atkinson, who's a pretty, pretty skilled player. Yeah. And, you know, Panera's, who's he playing with now? Rangers, right?
Yes, he's with the Rangers.
Yeah, so he's with the Rangers, and I think, wasn't he over with Chicago?
Yeah, that didn't work out well, but yeah, he was over.
I thought him and Kane played well together.
Yeah, he had a good year, and then I don't know if it's locker room stuff or what, but that's where he started, right? He was Chicago, Columbus, yeah, and then the Rangers, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Patrick Kane missed him when they traded him. So I think they brought Brendan Saad back for him, didn't they?
I don't recall who came back. Saad's back.
They had a good year, Saad, with Chicago when they won the cup. And then he left and went to Columbus. And then Chicago really missed him. So they brought him back at the expense of getting rid of Panarin, who had great chemistry with Kane on the ice. So. You know, they call him the bread man, I think.
Yeah.
And so anyway, players, man. Cam Atkinson's a tough player to play against, too. He's always a Red Wing killer.
Yeah. No, that Panarin, he was a good, he was an old rookie because he had played in the KHL for a few years. So he was almost like getting a college age, 23, 24-year-old when he came into the league with Chicago. So he was mature and stepped in and scored 30 for Chicago. Yeah, I was surprised, and I don't recall the backstory or history why they let him go. If it was just to get Saad back,
I think that's what it was. I don't ever remember hearing any stories about friction or anything. I mean, so yeah, I'd have to look into that one. That would be nice to know. Maybe for a future show, we can bring that up.
Yeah.
There's some good players in Columbus, though, and those numbers will grow the more playoff success they have.
Yeah. Last and least, a blast from the Detroit past, Ray Sheppard leads the Florida Panthers with 18 points, number 31.
Yeah, that guy had hands, man.
Yep. Didn't they call him Hands?
Wasn't that his nickname? I referenced him in the bracket show that we did with the goal scorers, the best goal scorers or shooters in the NHL, that list you were, the popularity bracket we did. And I mentioned Ray Sheppard. Somebody had Ray Sheppard Hands, and that guy could definitely, if he was a on the doorstep with the puck. I mean, there's nobody in the NHL that I saw could put a puck away like that guy. Couldn't skate great or anything like that. I don't even think he could play in today's NHL.
Right.
Now, you know how we talked about Gilbert Perreault, who could transition to any era. And, we should have a show about players who had prominent scoring years in different eras that couldn't play in this decade or hockey now. He'd be one of them. Great hands, man. And I'm guaranteeing you this 18 points was done in 1 year, right?
Yeah, the bulk of them was. It was the year they went to the Cup Finals in 96. I don't remember who they lost to.
Colorado.
Yeah, right. Yep, Colorado. Yep, Colorado 96.
Yeah, it was Van Beek-led Panthers.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rat Mellonby. They
The
throw all the rats on
rats.
him.
Yep.
But Barkov should be an Huberdeau are pretty talented. So if they can make some playoff runs, and I think they were qualifying this year, weren't they?
I believe so. They were one of the teams that was in and out, but I believe they're qualified if it were to start now. I haven't looked at the standings in so long.
Yeah, I don't
I'm sure.
know who the goalie, who's the goaltender over there now. Is it? It's a veteran guy, isn't it? Like Longo or somebody?
I don't know if he's back in Florida or not. I'd have to
Yeah, I can't
go
remember. I
back
don't
through and
well,
look.
but I do know
Yeah.
a 3-round run that Ray Sheppard will be unseated by one of these guys. They're pretty skilled big forwards. Huberdeau and Barkov get pretty much a lot of love around the league as being a handful to play against. So,
They got Bobrovsky's their goalie now.
okay. Yeah, he's
Yeah,
had
he's
some
decent.
disappointing play in the playoffs with Columbus all those years, and when they thought they could unseat Detroit. And,
So
you
you
know.
they got their Ray Sheppard, their all-time leader. You already scored 50 for the Wings. He had four straight 30-plus goal seasons. Do you remember who the Wings got in return when they traded Sheppard?
Who do they trade him to? The Rangers?
The Sharks.
Oh, let me guess. Brad Stewart?
Nope, this is way before Brad Stewart. It was a
What do you
Russian.
mean?
It was
Oh, Larry
96.
Allen.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember thinking it was crazy 'cause
Igor
he's
was so old.
yeah, 'cause Igor was old and Sheppard had, he was only what, 2 years removed from a 50 goal season and he scored 30 or more every year with the Wings and then yeah, five
You know
games
what
in.
that is? That's basically an organization that is smart, kind of like the Patriots, another football reference. But you get guys and you're wondering, this trade is crazy for value as far as age and stuff. It just doesn't jive. But, and I'm even thinking because Larionov came, he first started with Vancouver, came in the league with Vancouver, and he didn't show well. Like he was an overage guy. Finally, the Red Army let him go, just like Fetisov. I even think it was a couple years later than Fetisov. It wasn't the same year. And he went up to Vancouver and just didn't fit in. You're wondering, okay, this guy is not going to adapt to the NHL. But then he goes to San Jose and you're still wondering, okay, can, this guy's not impressing me. He's not having a great year, not putting up huge numbers. And, is he too old? And, but it's, that tells you how important it is to have a thinker. But you having a brain to play this game because he came to Detroit and had the nice complimentary pieces around him. And then it just, what did it do? It extended his career like how many years?
Quite a few. Yeah, he was
Yeah. And
quite a
it's not
few.
like, go ahead.
I think he was still around on the 0-2 team, right?
Yeah, he scored that big
He scored
overtime
the big
goal. And
overtime goal. Yeah. So he
don't
was
know, was that here or?
34 in 96, so he would have been what, 40?
Yeah, the
He
prof, they
was
call him.
40. He was 40, so yeah, he was. It did. It extended his career quite a bit. And yeah, I remember just thinking it was crazy because I was a big Ray Sheppard fan. But that was what's his name? Scotty Bowman wanted him. He wanted him to play with his Russians here when he was making the Russian Five that year.
And you just knew it's all about that tells you that trade right there talk it it symbolizes how chemistry matters. And you're looking at that trade thinking, man, this value isn't it's not a fair value. And then but when you look at how Bowman assessed it and how he knew his team, how he wanted his team to be, that's forethought vision, I guess you can call it, or whatever.
Right.
Foresight. And he saw how he wanted his team, and he plugged this guy in, and it was a perfect fit, with Kozlov, and he could mentor him. That's another reason why that deal was done,
Right.
because he could mentor Fedorov and Kozlov.
Yep.
And So yeah, there's a number of reasons why deals are made. It's not always doesn't always make sense, but on paper, black and white with stats and stuff. But you know, the professor never came close to 40 goals. I guarantee you that, let alone 50.
Nope, that was his. What he did. That was his career year when he came to Detroit that year. He put up 21 goals and 71 points that first year with the Wings.
Yeah, and he probably didn't play a whole, like, you know, hell of a lot of minutes. But what he did play with the Russian Five is some of them years, I think Fedorov moved, one of the years he moved back to defense, I think.
Yep.
You know, when Yzerman got hurt. Yep. So it's like you didn't have the Russian Five together all the time. And but, yeah, for value on paper, you're thinking Ray Sheppard, 50-goal scorer, 45. He had his couple 30-goals-plus seasons, and this just doesn't make sense. But then what Bowman wanted to do with Larionov far exceeded what he wanted to do with Sheppard, evidently. So
right.
Worked out well.
Worked out real well.
That's why he's the mastermind.
Yeah, that's it. Our list is complete. 31 franchises, all-time playoff points leaders. For Tom, I'm Joe, and we'll see you back here next time on the lighter side.